Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Pope Benedict concludes his pilgrimage to the Holy Land with an urgent appeal for an end to violence and conflict. We take a close look at the last events on his schedule in Jerusalem, a visit to the Holy Sepulchre and a meeting with two Orthodox patriarchs. We look back at the Pope's moving encounter on Thursday with Jewish, Muslim and Druze religious leaders in Galilee, and we hear assessments of this papal visit from two key figures in the Church in the Holy Land, Patriarch Fouad Toile and the Franciscan Custos, Father Pier Battista Pizzaballa. No more bloodshed, no more fighting, no more terrorism, no more war. That was the urgent appeal made by Pope Benedict on Friday as he left Israel headed for the Vatican at the end of his 8-day pilgrimage to the Holy Land. Just before departing from Tel Aviv Airport, the Pope recalled some of the highlights of his visit to Jordan, Israel and the Palestinian territories, especially the encounters with leaders of other Christian churches and faith communities. The Pope also spoke of his moving and solemn visit to the Holocaust Memorial at Yad Vashem, where he met survivors and paid his respects to all victims of the Shoah.
Those deeply moving encounters brought back memories of my visit 3 years ago to the death camp at Auschwitz, where so many Jews, mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, sons, daughters, brothers, sisters, friends, were brutally exterminated under a godless regime that propagated an ideology of anti-Semitism and hatred. That appalling chapter of history must never be forgotten or denied. On the contrary, those dark memories should strengthen our determination to draw closer to one another as branches of the same olive tree, nourished from the same roots and united in brotherly love.
Pope Benedict then spoke of the conflicts in the Holy Land and the wider Middle East region today, noting that he came as a friend of both the Israeli and the Palestinian people. The Pope said it is deeply distressing to see the suffering and loss of life that both peoples have endured over the last 6 decades.
Allow me to make this appeal to all the people of these lands. No more bloodshed, no more fighting, no more terrorism. No more war. Instead, let us break the vicious circle of violence. Let there be lasting peace based on justice. Let there be genuine reconciliation and healing. Let it be universally recognized that the state of Israel has the right to exist and to enjoy peace and security within internationally agreed borders. Let it be likewise acknowledged that the Palestinian people have a right to a sovereign, independent homeland, to live with dignity and to travel freely. Let the two-state solution become a reality, not remain a dream. And let peace spread outwards from these lands. Let them serve as a light to the nations, bringing hope to the many other regions that are affected by conflict.
Finally, the Pope said one of the saddest sights during his visit was that of the wall, which divides Palestinians and Israelis, causing suffering and compounding the sense of mistrust between the two bitterly divided communities.
As I passed alongside it, I prayed for a future in which the peoples of the Holy Land can live together in peace and harmony without the need for such instruments of security and separation, but rather respecting and trusting one another and renouncing all forms of violence and aggression. To all of you I say, thank you, and may God be with you. Shalom.
Pope Benedict speaking at Tel Aviv International Airport before departing from Israel, headed for Rome on Friday. The empty tomb is a message of hope for the Church, and for all of humanity. Those were Pope Benedict's words on Friday as he visited one of the most significant of all Christian shrines, the Basilica of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, where Jesus was crucified, was buried, and rose again from the dead. Concluding his pilgrimage of peace and unity, as he called this journey before heading to Jordan last week, Pope Benedict said he had come to stand before the empty tomb, just as his predecessor, St. Peter, did on the first Easter morning.
Today, at a distance of some 20 centuries, Peter's successor, the Bishop of Rome, stands before the same empty tomb and contemplates the mystery of the resurrection. Following in the footsteps of the Apostle, I wish to proclaim anew to the men and women of our time the Church's firm faith that Jesus Christ was crucified, died, and was buried, and that on the third day he rose from the dead.
Pope Benedict said the empty tomb speaks of hope that will not disappoint, despite all the difficulties we encounter, a message that was directed above all to the Christians of the Holy Land who continue to leave the region in search of a better life elsewhere.
The Gospel reassures us that God can make all things new, that history need not be repeated, that memories can be healed, that the bitter fruits of recrimination and hostility can be overcome, and that a future of justice, peace, prosperity, and cooperation can arise for every man and woman, for the whole human family, and in a special way for the people who dwell in this land so dear to the heart of the Savior.
Pope Benedict speaking during his visit to the Basilica of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem. Since the earliest days, this great place of Christian worship has welcomed pilgrims and faithful from every part of the world and from every different denomination. But over the centuries, there have been many tensions and sometimes open conflicts over which church or community could celebrate and maintain access to this holy site. Despite these ongoing tensions, it seems that all the Christian churches welcomed Pope Benedict's visit on Friday. Father Athanasius Makora is secretary of the Commission for the Status Quo, which regulates ownership and use of the Christian holy sites in Jerusalem.
In the Holy Land, there are various shrines or churches which are shared by different Christian communities. For instance, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is shared by five communities. There are three major communities and two minor communities. In the Holy Sepulchre, for instance, the major communities are the Greek Orthodox, the Catholic Church, represented by the Franciscans, and the Armenians. And the status quo is what actually regulates the relationships between those communities, the times of prayers, the rights to repair certain things. So this is actually what actually regulates inside the place like the Holy Sepulchre. And analogously, the same situation exists in Bethlehem, in the Church of the Nativity. And it's the status quo that regulates actually the relationship between the communities and how they operate. It's this Ottoman decree from 1852, which forces each community to stay in its place and not attempt to expand its rights of property or use or cleaning. And each of the communities are trying to observe it correctly. Now, the status quo is not a code. It's rather more like a tradition in which each community has to stay in its particular place. For instance, each community has a set prayer time. So each community, for instance, in the Holy Sepulchre, we have masses in the tomb from 4:30 in the morning until 7:45. Then we have to give the tomb of Christ back to the Greeks. So this is basically the status quo. But the problem with the status quo is that it's not a written code which is shared. It's not an agreement between the communities. Rather, like I said, it's a kind of a ceasefire that was imposed on the churches in 1852 by the Ottoman authorities. So each community has to stay in its place. And the problem is that sometimes there's something that's vague. When a community, for instance, tries to do something new and it doesn't have the right to do it, then there are problems. So the status quo is inherently difficult to interpret. It's not clear and concise. And that's where all the problems lie. I think that the status quo in the holy places, that is to say, in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, in the Basilica of the Nativity, in the Tomb of the Virgin and the Shrine of the Ascension, they're pretty much not affected by the wider political situation, because inside these shrines, the communities that share these shrines, they know more or less what they are supposed to do. So everyone tries to be faithful and maintain their own rights. And even though the powers have changed, for instance, the status quo under the Ottomans, under the British, under the Jordanians, and now under the Israelis, the communities continue to do the same things. So we have not really been affected that much by the various powers. As such, the Holy Father, or a cardinal, or sometimes visiting dignitaries, like a head of state, have the right to make a solemn entry. And so for the Holy Father, we have organized a solemn entry into the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. And this has a format which is accepted by the communities. However, I have had to ask for some permissions from the Greeks and the Armenians to use a loudspeaker system, because use of loudspeakers is forbidden by the status quo in the Holy Sepulchre. And so I've had to ask for it, and they've granted it. So they've been actually very cooperative, and everything is going well.
You know, the Pope is our spiritual leader, and to have him come to the Holy Land is a powerful, powerful witness to our faith.
Franciscan Father Edwin Paniagua worked for several years in Jerusalem before coming to the Friars Minor headquarters here in Rome. He told me he believes the Pope's visit to the Holy Sepulchre at the end of this pilgrimage will have a lasting impact on the Church and the Christian communities throughout the Holy Land.
Absolutely. The Holy Father, even if he didn't say anything, just his presence alone spoke loudly and clearly and eloquently. And just to see how he was welcomed by the other faiths, the Armenians and also the Greek Orthodox. And the spirit of prayer of the whole event, we have, for example, the edicule, or the edicula, as they call it, the smart compartment that contains the tomb of Jesus, which, as you said, is one of the holiest, if not the holiest, site in the world, because it's a site of the resurrection. And the Holy Father just calling us all is like his common message throughout his whole visit to the Holy Land. You know, a call to dialogue, a call to reconciliation, a call to peace, a call to bear witness to the hope that comes from the Easter message of Jesus' resurrection.
It was a particularly strong message to the Christian communities there who struggle daily with the difficulties of life. He's
correct.
Particularly encouraging them to take heart from this Easter message.
Absolutely, and to persevere, as he has said in other occasions as well, to draw hope from the resurrection of Christ and to persevere, because one of the issues in the Holy Land is that a lot of the Christians are leaving, you know, are emigrating. And the fear is that with their exodus, that what we might be left with is just empty monuments. And so the Pope's presence to encouraging them to look beyond and to continue to bear witness themselves by their examples, by their lives, by their laws, and to stay in the Holy Land and continue the beautiful legacy that has been carried out for centuries.
You mentioned, of course, the ecumenical question there in the Basilica, so often a source of tension.
Correct.
How much do you think the Pope's visit there can help to improve these relationships?
Very much, very much. The Pope is such a powerful and influential figure in the world, and his presence has created this spirit. And I was watching on television how even among the Armenians and among the Greek Orthodox, they seem to be getting along. It's just a day when we're all getting along and looking beyond our differences and beyond the tensions. And especially when the Pope was actually visiting the place of Calvary, that altar, that section where we have the rock cut section where Jesus was crucified. You can see the Pope visiting and kneeling there, and you can see the Greek Orthodox being very hospitable about it, you know, and embracing him and welcoming him. I think that was such a beautiful gesture. And I think that the effects will last for a long time, you know, just like it did for Pope John Paul II as well.
My thanks there to Franciscan Father Edwin Paniagua. Looking back now to the penultimate day of this visit, Pope Benedict concluded his day in Nazareth on Thursday with the celebration of Vespers in the Basilica of the Annunciation and a moving meeting with leaders of the Muslim, Jewish, Druze and Christian communities in the Northern Galilee region. My colleague Rob White tells us more.
Deus in adiutorium meum intende.
After singing the Psalms and listening to the reading of the story of the finding of the child Jesus in the temple from the Gospel of Luke, Pope Benedict began his homily by speaking about how much the gathering at the holy site meant to him.
It is profoundly moving for me to be present with you today in the very place where the Word of God was made flesh and come to dwell among us. How fitting that we should gather here to sing the evening prayer of the Church, giving praise and thanks to God for the marvels he has done for us.
The Pope continued by reflecting on the meaning of the mystery of the Annunciation, in which the Spirit who came upon Mary is in fact the same Spirit who hovered over the waters at the dawn of creation. Yet, he said, we are reminded that the Incarnation was a new creative act.
Mary stands in the place of all humanity. She speaks for us all.
Pope Benedict XVI made a special mention of the presence in the assembly of Hebrew-speaking Christians, who are a reminder, he said, of the Jewish roots of the Christian faith. And he recalled the fact that in the Holy Land, Christians altogether form a minority of the population because many have emigrated in the hope of finding greater security and better prospects elsewhere.
Salam. Shalom.
Earlier in the afternoon, the Pope received a delegation representing Jewish, Muslim, Druze, and other religious leaders of Galilee in the modern auditorium of the Sanctuary of the Annunciation. During his discourse to the group, Pope recalled that at the heart of all religious traditions is the conviction that peace itself is a gift from God, yet it cannot be achieved without human endeavor. Lasting peace flows from the recognition that the world is ultimately not our own, he said, but rather the horizon within which we are invited to participate in God's love and cooperate in guiding the world and history under God's inspiration.
Galilee, a land known for its religious and ethnic diversity, is home to a people who know well the efforts required to live in harmonious coexistence. Our different religious traditions have a powerful potential to promote a culture of peace, especially through teaching and preaching the deeper spiritual values of our common humanity.
Finally, the Pope encouraged the exercise of mutual respect as peoples work together to ease tensions in the Holy Land.
I assure you that the Catholic Church is committed to join in this noble undertaking. In cooperation with men and women of goodwill, she will seek to ensure that the light of truth, peace, and goodness continue to shine forth from Galilee and lead people across the globe to seek all that fosters the unity of the human family. God bless you all.
Lord, grant us peace.
I'm Robert White.
And my thanks there to Rob for that report on Pope Benedict's activities in Nazareth on Thursday evening. Shalom, salam, peace. Whatever language you prefer, that appeal for peace has been at the heart of Pope Benedict's meetings with civil and religious leaders, as well as with ordinary people in Jordan, Israel, and the Palestinian territories. But what difference, if any, can these heartfelt appeals make to the seemingly intractable political conflict in the Holy Land today? Sean Patrick Lovett shares with us his final reflections as correspondent on this papal pilgrimage.
In the Holy Land, they call it peace rhetoric. Shalom, salam, peace. How many times have I heard that word over the past week? I've heard it said and sung by churchmen and children. I've seen it written in three alphabets on posters, flags, banners and balloons. I've seen it in computer graphics and on graffiti-covered walls. It's the word that's repeated most often in all of the Pope's 31 discourses. So, if everyone wants peace in this part of the world, why is it so hard to achieve? Popes and politicians, not to mention ordinary people like you and me, have been asking that same question for as long as the Holy Land has existed. A week ago, I would have said we're no closer to finding an answer than we have been for centuries. And maybe we're not. But right now, I'm not so sure. Call me ingenuous. But after a week of close encounters, after following this peace pilgrimage from behind the scenes, even after witnessing the fear, anger, and mistrust face to face, I still can't help feeling cautiously optimistic. Maybe, just maybe. The Pope made 31 public discourses, but we, listened to more than four times that number. Of course, many were no more than peace rhetoric, the same we've been hearing for years without seeing any results. But there were some speeches, and some of them made by people who count, that did contain convincing comments, and that included what sounded like concrete commitments as well. One thing is for sure. People are fed up. They've had enough. Christians, Jews, Muslims, everyone just wants to get up and get on with their lives. The Pope's message has been common sense and challenging. He's under no illusions, and neither are we. It'll take a lot more than words and prayers to heal the wounds of so much violence, to forget the pain of so many sacrifices. But then, God is great. Elohim Gadol. Allah Akbar. So maybe, just maybe. With the Pope in the Holy Land, I'm Sean Patrick Lovett.
And our thanks to Sean, who has been travelling on the papal plane throughout this visit, reporting on all the events and behind-the-scenes activities over the past week. Before departing from Israel on Friday, though, Sean had the chance to sit down with two of the church leaders who have been hosting this pilgrimage to the Holy Land, Franciscan Father Pier Battista Pizzaballa, the custos or custodian of the holy sites, and the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Archbishop Fuad Twal. To both men, Sean asked them to choose one image, one lasting impression of the journey, which will continue to bring hope and encouragement to their people.
I cannot choose only one picture. I have two pictures. The first, of course, is the cenacle. The cenacle was, I think, the poorest place we saw. Also, the ceremony was very short. It was not a gorgeous moment, of course, on the visit, but very intensive, very intimate. And also the meaning is very important, and also shows one side of our life, the solitude, the difficulties and the problems we are facing all the time. The other side, the Mass of Nazareth, was a marvelous moment. We saw so many people, enthusiasm, joy and passion. I think these two pictures represent very well Holy Land.
And overall this week, from Jordan to Israel to the Palestinian territories, your overall impression of this week with the Holy Father, seen as you saw it from very close up?
At the beginning I was a little afraid because there are so many problems here, so many also tentative of instrumentalization of his visit. But I saw that after all, now toward the end of the visit, I see that the visit is very successful. The Pope could say everything with frankness, but also with serenity, with freedom and liberty. And this touched everyone. And who he was able to say all the important things without rhetoric, without falling in the rhetoric of peace, well, as we call here in Holy Land, but at the same time also to give us an indication how we can build together the peace and reconciliation and tolerance among all of us.
The fact that we lived very, very good moments, beautiful moments everywhere it was really a rich experience. But if you ask me about one picture, I would have one album full of beautiful picture with the Pope, with the people, with the public, with the King Abdullah. Really, we had a very, very rich experience everywhere. Thanks God.
But Mount Nebo was special for you. Why?
Mount Nebo, I have a weak point for Mount Nebo. I am from Madaba. Mount Nebo is just 6 kilometers far away from home.
So
from
when you were a little boy, you used to go and play in that area?
With the difference, we used to go walking. Now we go by car.
That's the
only difference, yeah. But we are acquainted with these places, with Mount Nebo, yeah. With Madaba, with the famous map, mosaic map about the Holy Land, yeah. No, thanks God, in Jordan we have still stability. Political stability and political and psychological stability. That's why the majority of our seminarians are from Jordan. We have, thanks God, a seminary packed full of seminarians, majority of them coming from Jordan, as I am.
As journalists, we were very struck by the speech of King Abdullah, both when the Pope arrived and when the Pope left.
Really, he's wonderful. The royal family, all the royal family, and if we live with serenity and happy with our rights, and more than our rights, as Christians, as minority, it is thanks to the royal family and to their education, their culture. And then with that, we are faithful people, faithful to our land, to our kingdom, to our mission, and to our faith. Yeah, thanks God.
There was another political speech that struck us very much, the speech of Shimon Peres, when he met the Pope in Jerusalem.
Really, Shimon Peres is a good president, who delivered a very good speech. We would be very grateful if we can apply this speech on our realities, far, far away from our reality. The fact that this president, very nice statement, hasn't any power to put in practice what he said and what we are asking. I would be grateful if Netanyahu deliver the same speech as well as... But in the same time, I hope always, even Netanyahu is radical, but he's able to put courageous steps, courageous gestures. He's able. He can do that. And we hope.
Yes. We've heard the word peace, shalom, salam, so many times this week. Do you think we're even a little bit closer to a real peace after this visit of the Pope?
We hope. I don't think that will come next Monday, this peace. Normal, but at least we planned, we saw, and someday it will come out, yeah. It is a question of culture, mentality, yeah. Meanwhile, shalom is shalom now. It is antiphona, we repeat, day and night. It is nice. Better to sing shalom and salam and not to sing violence and suicide and so on. People were impressed, satisfied when the Pope met the people coming from Gaza. It was another sign. It is great that he has the time to think about these small details, which mean a lot for us.
Sean Patrick Lovett speaking there to Archbishop Fouad Toile, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, and earlier to Franciscan Father Pier Battista Pizzaballa, the custos or custodian of the holy sites. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again, if you can, at this same time tomorrow for reflections on the visit by Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.